Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 307. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also, want to thank our sponsors, Train Heroic and Play, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product. And Train Heroic, fantastic guys with a great product. And if you're not using it, I'd highly recommend it. But if you're not in the market, I would just let them know how much you appreciate them being part of the show the next time you see them. Also want to bring attention to our Play Pro app. You know, it's a new app that we release, a platform that we release that you can get to on your computer or on the phone. It's basically, the best way to describe it is it's Netflix for strength coaches. It's tons and tons of great content. You got live streams of our clinics, all for just $99, which is a phenomenal rate considering one clinic costs $150 to go to. So this week, joined by a good buddy of mine, Mike Hill, is the director of sports performance up in Georgetown. We've known each other for a long time, and just a guy that I respect tremendously, not just because of the job that he does, but the type of person that he is. And appreciate you coming on the show, man.
No, thank you for having me. I'm glad I'm more of a private speaker and not a public speaker, so you catch me in my domain.
That's what it's all about, right? Well, that's what's great about these podcasts is it's, you know, the idea is that it's just two coaches having a conversation and everybody gets to be a fly on the wall, you know, and that's, you know, the Chalk Talk sessions, that's when I learned the most, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mike, you spent most of your career there at Georgetown, but I mean, you were at a couple of high schools before that. You were at Capital, I think, you know, you work with as a consultant for a lot of different companies. Which stop or which experience has impacted you the most in your career and why?
I would probably say my first year here at Georgetown. And I say that as because I was, and I hate the term grinding because it says that you're, you know, banging against the walls. But, you know, I was working. I was working in every sense to, you know, metaphorically create this dream of mine. And it made me appreciate everything I had. So I came here as the first intern and created the internship program with Coach Augie Morelli, sure. Who you know, who is a legend. I mean, he trained with Bill Starr. And so that was probably my best experience was being here in 2004. So I came here in 2004, been here for roughly 15 years. And so I was not making any money. I was personal training at a Gold's Gym to keep my dream alive. I was working at lots of different high schools within the area, and Augie was getting me jobs, and he was helping me with that. And I can say this, he's a guy who literally would take his shirt off his back and give it to me. And this is going to sound really bad, because he did give me his shirt and his shorts. And one day I came in and I had his shorts on, and he was like, "Who gave you those?" I'm like, "You did." And they were super short, like super high, like Augie style. But he would do that for you, you know? He would buy you coffee. That was the first year when I really looked back that I guess now in my, you know, domain being here for this long is what I'm trying to do. So that was the most impactful. There was other, you know, little stops and things. You know, I was living out in California doing the personal training thing. And those had like specific, you know, programming or speaking to somebody else. They all had specific things, but in long run, it was my first year here as an intern.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, ultimately I think what you learned in that first year that you can carry out and continue to do. And Augie knew really, really well was that it's a people business, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about the people you surround yourself with, especially when you're a staff and you're in that weight room and that submarine for 12 hours a day, you know, you want to make sure that you like the people that you work with, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But they're got your best interest at heart, but you know, you make a lot of mistakes along the way in this profession. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you learn from it?
I think, and when I think this is what a lot of strength coaches do starting out, is you start out and you don't actually do your programs. And I learned that really quick. I came here and Augie made me do my programs very quickly. And I mean, like, the day I got there. And so, you know, when I was personal training and doing other things and kind of experimenting, you're experimenting your own programs, you know, you're making up all these things and seeing if it sticks, going off of the science, you're trying to learn the practical application. But what Augie really did was, have you ever done five snatches in a row at that percent? It doesn't work. You know, have you ever done this? And so that was one of the biggest probably mistakes, trying to apply too much science rather than too much of the real world application.
Yeah, I think that's such an important thing. That's the very first thing that we do in our internship program, is we make the interns go through the actual workout that we're doing. So they're not sitting there, you know, dog cussing a kid for not giving great effort when they've never actually gone through it and experienced what it's like to freaking, you know, get done with that heavy set of cleans and then have to go right to the next set of whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we age, as you and I age, we've been in this for a long time, you and I, you know, it doesn't mean you have to go and you have to kill yourself with, you know, trying to be this, you know, this meathead strength coach lifting all this weight anymore. But you still need to be able to demonstrate. You still need to be able to feel and experience, and definitely going through it at least once is super important.
Yeah.
At Georgetown, you got a lot of sports. It's not a football, you know, it's not known for a football school, obviously, but, you know, basketball is the kingpin there. But you've had to run the whole shebang, you know, for quite some time. Talk a little about running, you know, a total program, but also one that maybe football isn't the king of the athletic department.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have 29 sports. They always say 750-plus-ish athletes, give or take. And so, you know, my first team that Augie gave me, well, I guess retro back, the first team I ever actually trained was football on a Sunday, and it was to relieve him, really. You know, he just gave me a whistle. Literally, I walked in there, and he threw me to the wolves. That was a learning experience in itself. But my first real team was sailing, and they had no attention whatsoever. Still love those kids. And honestly, those are the kids that give back, you know, right. Your sailings, your crews, the other sports who have a great experience, because they're honestly, when you peel back all those layers, they're there to feel good and have a great experience. And some of them go to the Olympics, some of them do whatnot, but like, unlike where football is, their motive is to win and to win at a high level and or to make money doing that. Whereas, you know, some of the, you know, I can speak for these athletes here at Georgetown. They are here to get a good education. They are here to follow in the lineage of their parents, maybe. Or, you know, they want to go to specifically, let's say, business school here to move on to New York to go to Wall Street. So they're just here to... you know, putting the fun and play back into it, really. And so those kids had great experience. So that was my first team. And then it worked on to field hockey and women's lacrosse, women's basketball. But I always helped out with men's basketball. And so kind of like that groundedness of the way we treat these men's basketball athletes in the weight room is the way everyone else. You come in, you shake their hand, you check from head to toe. Are you wearing Georgetown gear? Do you have headphones in? All that stuff. That person on the basketball team is held, and this is by no means a spectrum, but I'm going to label it that way, is men's basketball. I treat those guys the same to a sailing or crew. And I hope those athletes see all that stuff. So it is humbling training all those teams, but I think, you know, going back, I set myself up for success with that. I learned all their names. You know, just what we do today, say hi to them, shake their hand, look them in the eye, say please and thank you in the weight room, stuff like that. So
important. I mean, so important. And then, you know, like you said, those are the athletes that give back to the program. So when you're talking about fundraising and things like that, that's always a positive. But they're also the ones that, you know, they go off to be leaders in society, you know, mm-hmm. They're going off to be the doctors and the lawyers and the business people and the whatnot, especially out of Georgetown. And it's always great to, you know, when you realize that you're impacting not just the 4 years, but the 40 years after that, you know,
yeah.
that's powerful in and of itself. Talk, you know, you and I have talked a lot through the years about success and what that kind of means, you know. Talk a little bit about setting yourself up for success. You've got some young coaches, you've got some, you know, you've been mentoring coaches through the years. What does it mean to set yourself up for success as a strength coach?
Yeah. And I think the normal path for that, I reference this with Coach Jay DeMail, was, you know, I set myself up for success. But how you do that is, you know, the kids who come through and when they're first year strength coaches, they think they know all the science, and that's just one avenue. They're pointing their telescope in one direction. And so setting yourself up for success, a forgotten art for me is like learning your name, learning where you've been, learning your history, learning my history, you know. I've done interviews where kids have come in and said, hey, I'm looking for Coach Hill. And they're looking around and they got sweatpants on and whatever they have on. Right. And or they, you know, they're looking around and they see me in the corner. They introduce themselves to everyone else but me. And, you know, it's like, do your due diligence, figure things out. You know, setting yourself up could also mean, you know, when you're researching a school or a sport, you know, you can't train swimming and diving if you've never gotten in the pool. You can't train football if you've never been hit. I just feel like you should experience that to a certain level, and or you're training, you know, the highest level of athlete, and, you know, you need to learn his history rather than, you know, just coming in and being like, hey, this is how I'm going to fix you. I'm the genius and whatnot. And I think all the stuff around that science, all the stuff around the, you know, the personal one-on-one relationship that you're going to have with that athlete or with that team. And that could be anywhere from, you know, reading your book, listening to your podcast, you know, I have a laundry list. I mean, for me, setting myself up for success, and I will show this, is I have a 4-quadrant list here of questions that you're going to ask me here. I have a book list of many things that I have. I have some things, topics that I would like to talk to, and I have previous podcasts written over here. But people don't see that. They don't see me trying to set myself up for this interview for success. They see myself as, you know, maybe just some guy who just probably going to answer some questions, and they may not take something. You know, for me, that's me. But that's what kind of what I'm talking about is I don't think kids do that enough. You know, especially when you see that when people send emails, you know, they say, "Hey, coach, something, something," and they don't even put your name. So I guess that's kind of what I mean by that setting yourself up for success.
Yeah, I mean, it all goes back to preparation, right?
Preparation, yeah.
And I think that, to me, that's whether or not you're an athlete, you're a business person, you're a coach, you know, whatever it may be, you have to prepare for things as if it is a competition, right? And, you know, having those types of things, you know, putting in the legwork, it's gonna give you more confidence. When you have more confidence, you're going to be able to coach with that. And it's so important. And then you tied in, you know, what I talk about in my book, you know, about not just being a technician, but being a manager of time, people, and resources, and being an entrepreneur, become forward thinking and thinking outside the box, you know. Mm-hmm. And you have to do those things to be a success in anything, much less strength and conditioning. And you know, strength and conditioning is even so much harder because you're not dealing with just a you know, a one type of personality through. I mean, you're dealing with lots of personalities that are typically type A, that are competitive, that are emotional, and you have to motivate them all in one direction. And that's why mm-hmm. coaching is such a great profession. You know, Georgetown is obviously, you know, it's a stellar institution. Lots of smart people go there. Obviously, athletes are at a higher level to get into school there. You talk a lot about the weight room being a learning environment. You know, what do you mean by that? And what are some tactical things that you do to make sure that your athletes understand what you're doing and why you're doing it?
I guess, you know, it goes back to my mom was a teacher for, and I said this on a podcast and she actually corrected me. It was more than 40 years. She was a teacher. So like, I always got that. You need to apply yourself. You need to do more. You're smart. I was got this, you know, that a lot growing up that, you know, I always watched but I never said anything, and I always knew more than what I would tell. But actually, as I get older, I'm like, that's great. You know, that's, I wish these kids would do that. And so I guess learning, you know, I try and create this space, this hour, this time, and from the time they come in, conscious of what, obviously, what they're wearing, what they're doing, what they're saying, words, you picture, you know, I've been here long enough to know, you know, the history of Coach Thompson and Big Coach Thompson of being here, hearing a lot of those stories, and how, I shouldn't say strict, but they call it Hoya Paranoia, you know, from the outside looking in. But the military calls those black sites, and they have those different groups that go around. You don't really know much about, but once you're in them, you understand them, and you understand why you don't talk about things and do things, because you want that culture to grow. So you picture Georgetown men's basketball. You could probably picture, you know, me jumping up and down, screaming, yelling, doing curls or something, listening to, and I'm going to say, you know, I love 2 Chainz, but, you know, that's not what it is. It is those guys coming in, they have to learn their cards. They have to learn their system. They have a mentor and a mentee at each rack, a veteran and a freshman. There's no music. I put on the worst music they could possibly imagine. God bless Neil Diamond, but I love him, but they hate him. So I want, and if they complain, I go even worse to that music, and or I give them a dilemma of somebody's got to do, you know, 50 up downs before it happens. And they always point at, you know, the guy who was late or the freshman. If kids come in, yeah, I let them use their own music because I want them to do extra work. If we're doing a testing day, maybe. We had one testing day where we maxed out the 185 bench to Lady in Red, that song. And I want them tuning that out. That is kind of a learning, you know, when we go to different stadiums, there's people yelling at them. They need to have that mechanism to tune that out. That goes with a learning environment of they have all of their performance standards on the rack. They also have not only the auditory, what I'm saying to them, but visually I have them pick out visual pictures. So they send it to me and they, you know, and there's multiple ones, but it could be, it can't be religious, and it can't be a parent or a figure in your family. But if a picture of, you know, Mike Tyson, I've posted that before, Mike Tyson's eyes, and his eyes is up in the rack, I don't have to say anything to that kid. Just, he needs to look at that photo and he needs to know this time is serious. And there's a lot more research coming out about that stuff now is, you know, I have those kids pick their own pictures. So when they look up at a kid homeless and eating food, maybe that motivates them a little bit more to get that extra set. There's, I guess, a lot of little things like that, you know, like this may be blasphemy, but out of season I do even numbers and in season I do odd numbers. And those kids don't necessarily know what's happening with that. But I do. And there's different ways. Does a kid cheat a rep or does he add a rep? I don't know. You know,
right.
You'd have to ask the kids here, but there's a lots of those little things. And each day I have my lesson plans. I don't have them here, but I go through, I have a quote of the day, much like everybody else. You know, much like your book, the weight room wisdom is, I have a lesson plan, a little thing, what I'm going to tell them.
Right.
So rather than conjumble with a ton of stuff and try and teach them all these different things and then go, you know, into coaches meetings later and say, hey, I told the athletes this. Hey, I told them this. Today I told them about nutrition. Today I told them about, you know, protein. Today I told them about why good sleep habits. So I have that listed out. And that goes back to, you know, my mom being the educator.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. Well, there's so much good stuff to dig into that. I mean, obviously, you talked about having visual stimuluses and auditory stimuluses, and I'm assuming kinesthetic, you know, stimuluses, yeah, as well.
Yeah.
And creating that, make sure that, you know, our athletes don't all learn the same way, and I think that that's important, and that's why the weight room I think is great. And if you're coming at it from those three approaches, I think it's fantastic. But the main thing that I pulled out of that was, We've got to stop enabling our athletes. I mean, there is a degree of logistics and getting, you know, 750 athletes through and doing it in an efficient manner. But, you know, that doesn't mean we have to tell them what to do, what to wear. You know, it can't be so black and white that you're paralyzed or the athlete's paralyzed. And so throwing in Lady in Red every so often you're changing the environment. You know, that's what, you know, I mean, if you got 12 weeks to get ready for a season or however many weeks for basketball, if you're not doing it in the other, you know, 40 weeks or whatever it is, then you're in trouble. I mean, they're not, you're not reinforcing what they're going to experience. And that's ultimately what strength and conditioning is all about, I think.
Yeah.
You know, at Georgetown, you're dealing with a lot of foreign athletes, and, you know, and then you, I think you, your wife's from Italy, right? From
Italy. Yes. Yeah.
You know, talk a little bit about, you know, working with athletes from different cultures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess when I first came here, there was a funny story, and I was coaching this kid up in basketball, and, you know, thought I knew everything. Just came up to the kid, didn't really ask his name, came up and just started. His name is Cornelius, but I was talking to him, and Augie's like, he doesn't speak English. And this is after me talking to him for quite some time. And so I just dialed it back. Was, you know, this, I think it was my first 2 weeks on the job, something like that. And dialing that back, you know, we've now had multiple, usually one, maybe two per year in terms of men's basketball. In terms of across the gamut, I'm not sure the numbers of the sports of those 750 athletes, but there's a good number of those kids coming from. One is kind of, the biggest thing is the emphasis that is put on this portion is so different than any other place. Finding a weight room where my wife is from Italy is hard. I mean, you know, running outside is even foreign to the foreigners. And you know, they're sitting there smoking a cigarette on a bench, and you're running around, and they're like, "What are you doing? You're going to do burpees in the front of the patio in front of the in Siena." Like, but it, you know, each kid going back to that is setting yourself up for success. If, you know, for me specifically, we now have a gentleman on our team who transferred from NC State, and he's from Turkey. So knowing the history of him, knowing a little bit about his culture, you know, I've never been there, but just being open with that, having a good dialogue with that. We've had guys from Nigeria. Last night, the president of Congo, we met the president of Congo, Dikembe was here. And, you know, just knowing a little bit of that history, Dikembe came in, told everybody about the history. We met the president of Congo. He walked around. And then afterwards, Dikembe, you know, had talked and thanked all of us for coming. But just knowing and giving that reference, I guess it's a smaller level, but doing it at a bigger level with each one of those athletes. But I think the biggest transition is how much emphasis we do put on this more than just playing your sport. It's talking about the sports psychology, you know, all of the hygiene that they have to do, sleep, all that stuff, recovery, you know, and I think that's a shock for a lot of those kids who do come over here. But I think they do. That's the biggest buy-in too with it. It's, you know, different. This game's the same, but everything else, the preparation is there's just more emphasis across the board.
Yeah, it's so important, I think, you know, for strength coaches. And I know you and I talk about this whenever we get together. It's a big world out there, and it's much bigger than the four walls of our weight room. And so many times we just kind of stay focused on that. But having the experience of working with foreign athletes starts to open your mind, I think. And I'm a firm believer that you have to get out of the country. You have to go experience, you know, your career in another area and see what the nuances are, the differences are, and just think outside the box and then take the good and leave the bad and vice versa, you know. But it's an important part of this journey. And it's why I'm doing what I'm doing now, is going and experiencing strength conditioning on a global stage, because there's lots of good out there and there's lots of questions that come up. Like, are we really doing this? Why are we doing this? You know?
Absolutely. I think in here in the U.S. too I shouldn't say there's a lot of, you know, pigeonhole programs, but getting literally outside the box and looking at those other places and going somewhere refreshes the mind and opening up to the, you know, the culture I think a lot of the good ideas are coming from, you know, an overseas place. And so, you know, we do an outreach program with the UK where we get one to two interns from the University of Halle. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's stuff like that. It's so huge to grow in this profession. And I always say that we're still within the first 100 years of it. And so we all have an obligation. Everybody that's listening has an obligation to contribute to making this profession better, because it's still relatively new. That's part of it, I think. We end the show with some resources, man. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
I guess the Augie's given me a lot of coaching advice, I guess, throughout the years. To pick out one of those, I'm not sure. But honestly, I think one thing, just in a short, what he told me was, in a sense, it's not about the program underneath, like in lower capital letters. It's about the entire program in bold capital letters. And that was what I learned throughout the years. And he didn't directly say that, but that's what I observe. In the old method is observe, learn, and then you develop. So OLD. I observed that, I learned it, and I developed that, and kind of, I guess that's the best advice, you know, through him. He had given, you know, there's a lot of these rules that had profanity in it that he is, you know, and give advice, but that's in general, you know, what he was saying to me all these years was, it's not about the program, it's about the entire program that you're running.
Great advice. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
So book, I got to throw this out. It's one of my favorite books. I've read it a couple of times. It's Verbal Judo, and it's by George Thompson. And I have on my Instagram is my Hills Book Club, because I started putting that stuff out there because I did read a lot and people weren't believing me. But I'm now reading a lot of different other things, military stuff, you know, stuff like this. But Verbal Judo, what it was, you know, you know, looking at the words that you're saying, how you're saying it, your tone, your pitch, and then observing other people's words, you know, judo, rolling with the words rather than karate and boxing where you're punching up against somebody, right. You know, put in short terms, not one-upping when someone says, hey, that's a good song. No, it's a great song, you know, right. And it just, you know, people one-up each other and they go back and forth and they get defensive. And that opened up kind of a whole new dimension to words for me. And I read it a long time ago, and then I read it again halfway through my coaching career. And then I referenced it again when I started the book club, because I think it is huge for athlete or for coaches, and well, athletes should read it, but coaches to read and learn what they're saying is really powerful. How you say it, when you say it, if you cut someone off. I'd say Verbal Judo. And website, I guess I'm not too much into doing some searching and stuff, but I have recently, and through my reading and whatnot, I read a book called Scale by Jeffrey West, and it kind of drew me to the Santa Fe Institute. So I would probably say the SFI, the Santa Fe Institute, you know, just looking outside the box and actually how the world is working. And I just took a class called Complexity Theory, which is Complexity Explorer. And they offer free classes, and, you know, there's different, Georgetown offers free classes and whatnot, but I think it's me getting outside the box and learning that stuff, you know, what, dynamics theory, chaos theory, you know, information, cellular automata, genetic algorithms, stuff like that. Learning that will make you wonder and think about other things and, you know, why is this working and how, you know, there's a lot of applications to that in your day to day. Once you open and expand. So I've been doing that and waiting for the next class to open up, chaos theory. So, I would say Santa Fe Institute. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Any apps?
I actually, it's funny when you asked that, I was like, I honestly don't use many apps. You know, we've used Huddle Technique. We've used some things, here, but honestly, the only app I really use on my iPhone, besides, you know, the Twitter, Facebook, the social media ones, Instagram, is the podcast. I feel like I learn, like I said, I'm a private speaker. I've spoken in public, but I'm not the best public speaker. I don't think. I think I have the most meaningful, powerful conversations, you know, one-on-one. So I like the podcast where I can listen to somebody at my own, you know, pace. And it basically opens up all these avenues rather than I have to go to a location and spend that time, physical time. I guess it's kind of like my dark matter, my space in between my life. I'm listening to that.
So. Right. No, I couldn't agree more. You know, the thing that I, you know, in our friendship, the thing that I've always respected the most about you is that is exactly what you're saying, where you've looked, you know, you've looked outside the box. You haven't just pigeonholed yourself in this strength and conditioning box. You're looking at chaos theory and dynamic theory, and you're researching, you know, how the world goes and how we can apply that to strength and conditioning. And I think ultimately, that's how we advance this profession. That's how we make it so that it is viewed in that positive light. And right now, when lots of negatives surrounding the view of strength and conditioning, we have an obligation, all of us, to be better in the profession. And you've always done that. Like you said, you haven't done it as much, you know, visibly, maybe externally. That's not how it's done. It's done in the trenches. You know, it's one-on-one conversations, and it's doing great and being a great professional representative in your everyday. And you do that at the highest level, man. So I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing.
No, thank you. Absolutely. I'm definitely honored, and I'm glad we're able to cut out the time and do this.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.